The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Bringing you the ag information you need, this is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
More short covering in the wheat markets led by Kansas City SRW futures on the day Wednesday. Plus, the news cycle may be having an impact once again on the cattle market. We're going to talk about all that and more here today on Market Talk. Thanks for joining us on the show. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Coming up here on the program, we're going to talk about this continued strength here in the wheat market. More fund short covering. Largely, the reasoning seems to be tied to weather concerns. Dryness in the southwestern plains of the U.S., dryness in southern Russia. All of this kind of combining to add a little bit of risk premium, it looks like, into this wheat market again as we continue the upward move on Wednesday. Plus, some news about HBAI being found in milk samples, even though the FDA reaffirming that pasteurized milk is safe to drink and it's very minimal to no threat to human health. Still, it looks like it's an issue here impacting the cattle markets. We found some pressure on Wednesday. Was it all related to that? Are there other factors? We're going to talk about all those issues and more. Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, is going to join us for market analysis coming up in segment 2 and 3 today. No doubt looking forward to what Mike has to say and some of the latest analysis he is going through as we look at these markets. So we'll get to that conversation coming up here in segment 2 and 3 today. We'll also take a look at some news headlines here in segment 4 to wrap up market talk. So plenty to get to on today's program. Let's start with a little bit of market analysis, though. Comments from our midday commentary on Wednesday with Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at StoneX. I talked to Arlen about the continued short covering surge in the wheat market. A little more quiet action at quarter beans, though, on Wednesday as some farmer selling, it sounds like, maybe impacting and capping the gains in corn and beans at midweek. We also talk about some of the disparity between the USDA and the Brazilian CONAB numbers that is having a bit of an impact in the trade. And we get some thoughts in livestock as we were kind of mixed to lower at midday Wednesday when we talked. And then the cattle futures kind of pushed a little more to the downside after that. But nonetheless, some thoughts in this cattle trade surrounding that HBAI found in milk samples. Here are those comments from Wednesday's midday commentary with Arlen Suderman of StoneX.
Well, we're seeing kind of a mixed day across the board, and I think there's some relationship there. As we look at what's happening in the outside markets, they're kind of waiting cautiously for tomorrow's GDP data on the U.S. economy and then Friday's PCE inflation data. That's the inflation data the Fed pays most attention to after recent CPI data has been coming in hotter than previously expected in recent months. And so there's some nervousness about that PCE data. So that has traders cautious in the outside markets. That carries over then into the commodities as well. The dollar kind of firming up and trading just below 5-month highs once again today. And that creates some headwinds kind of for the commodities. But in the grain and oilseed market specifically, we do see those double-digit gains once again for Kansas City hard red winter wheat. The kind of a combination there of the weather concerns and the impact that is having on funds holding large short positions, those short positions being kind of global in the major markets, world wheat markets. And so they started covering those, as you know, we've been following that in recent days, and now we're starting to turn the chart signals after closing above the 100-day moving average yesterday for the lead contract. And once you do that, that triggers additional short covering. So I would call this mostly money flow built on the concerns of what if this weather problem continues to be something that's more significant. And I'm talking about weather not only in U.S. plains, but also in southern Russia and eastern Ukraine, as well as excessive wetness in parts of Europe. Corn and soybeans trying to follow along, but heavier farmer selling on both sides of the equator limiting the gains there.
This South American picture, too, that's another aspect. A lot of talk in the trade about the USDA CONAB disparities and the numbers there. And that's something I know you're watching as well, along with many other folks are kind of watching how that's going to play out over the next few weeks ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. A tremendous disparity between USDA's estimate of Brazilian corn and soybean production and CONAB's, which is the equivalent of USDA in Brazil, with USDA being the higher estimate. And what it comes down to is supply and demand in the long run have to match up. You can't have more demand than what you have supply. And so USDA took the approach, if you have year after year after year of demand exceeding supply, then your supply numbers are too low. And you can't have negative ending stocks at the end of your marketing year. So they went back and upward adjusted yields and have been working with higher yields than what CONAB has been. And when that disparity got too much, then they went to increasing area. It's really difficult to really confirm either one because so much of the crop is produced in really back country of Brazil where there is no good surveying methodology. But the bottom line, though, is the math seems to support USDA's numbers. And as we talk to our people in Brazil, they say the cash market in Brazil seems to support the supplies that USDA indicates better as well.
Real quick in livestock, kind of quiet day there. Wondering, are we bumping up against some overhead technical resistance maybe here in cattle and hogs on the recent rallies?
Well, certainly a factor, a stronger dollar, a factor as well. The cattle market, though, was higher yesterday until reports came out that Colombia had suspended beef imports from states where we found bird flu in cattle. Now, Colombia is not a significant export market for U.S. beef, but it once again brings the news to the forefront and concerns that the country may be just the first domino to fall. So media coverage on the dead virus found in retail dairy products, fragments of virus, also perhaps contributing to the shaky futures action over the last couple of days. So I think the cattle market is really more concerned once again about this bird flu in the dairy herd, making the funds reluctant to hold on to long positions in that market.
And once again, comments there with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at Stone X, talking with him in our midday commentary on Wednesday. Good to talk with Arlen once again. Always great to get his thoughts on what's happening in the market trade. Coming up here, we're going to talk markets with Mike Zuzulo as well from Global Commodity Analytics in just a second. No doubt the news cycle may be having an impact on cattle here again. USDA announcing on Wednesday, wanted to share this as well, some actions to try and help protect livestock health as they've issued federal orders that will be effective on Monday. One of those is for mandatory testing for interstate movement of dairy cattle, and the other is for mandatory reporting, trying to help get ahead of this disease and limit its spread. So again, that news coming out from USDA on Wednesday, and that's something that we continue to fight this spread of HPAI, avian influenza, in dairy cattle. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the continued short covering and higher moves in the wheat markets as well here. We saw wheat, the upside leader, again on Wednesday. Coming up next, Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics is going to join us for market analysis. We'll get to our conversation with Mike after this here on Market Talk.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Well, we saw the wheat markets continue their rally on the day Wednesday. This time it was Kansas City wheat, the upside leader, but all three complexes found more strength with some short covering. Corn and soybeans a little more mixed and muted on Wednesday's session. And we got some more headline risk, it sounds like, in this cattle market to discuss. Joining us now for a conversation, Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. Mike, good to talk with you again this week. And no shortage of topics to discuss, I guess. You know, hey, I'll start with our old friend, the wheat market. What a couple of days here in this wheat trade, Mike.
Yeah, we better enjoy it while we can. We've finally gotten that wheat-led April rally that's taken hold here, Jesse. We've rallied more than one day. That's got to be a record in the record books here for the last several months. The thing that I think is important to pick up on when it comes to what you said was the hard red wheat coming in and leading the show. And that's really what needs to happen, because our model year has been 2009 as far as what the potential move to the upside and the timing of that. And this is something you and I have looked at for several weeks now, is that late April time period of 2009 was a time period where the market really found some support and headed higher. The exact opposite was the case in 2015. And so we've got the geopolitics back in play. We've got the weather in Europe back in play. And as of Monday afternoon's crop conditions report, the fact that we're down about 24 points in Colorado in Oklahoma versus the 1st of April, and 12 points lower in Kansas versus the 1st of April in good to excellent conditions. You pin that up against the 12% corn planting number and the 8% bean planting number, it would make sense that the wheat would need to continue to lead this market higher, fundamentally speaking. So that's kind of the launch point for where we are at here at midweek. I don't mind corrections on a daily basis, but this is one of those markets where, as we'll look at in some of the charts that I've provided to you today, we'll need to see a continuation and the momentum continue to go higher if this is indeed similar to 2009.
Well, let's look at our first chart, the HRW wheat historical, and I'll make this comment. You know, I've been watching the short covering happen here in the wheat in the rally, and I've been saying to myself, okay, I want to see follow through. I want to keep seeing follow through, and was waiting for the other shoe to drop. Well, knock on wood, so far, three sessions in a row, we've continued to follow through here. So talk about that a little bit and what you're seeing on the HRW chart right now.
Yeah, and this is really important from a standpoint of the SRW had been able to make new, essentially three-month highs. We got above the April high. We got above the March high. We even were knocking on the door of getting above the February high earlier this week. I think it was on Tuesday. The idea was that the hard red wheat, though, should be the main leader to the upside. But I do think that's worth noting the soft red wheat working in conjunction with the hard red wheat is very important, because at the end of the day, what you and I have been talking about for several weeks now is the idea of an April rally, of a wheat-led April rally, because we were going into corn and bean planting, and we knew there was a lot of supplies of corn out there, and to a lesser degree soybeans because of the last WASD report. But the idea was, we've got a lot of funds that are short in a big, big manner, and do they really need to be this short? And I think when we talked about the wheat-led rally, I talked about the Federal Reserve and I talked about China. I think we've dealt with both of those very, very nicely in terms of the currency markets and also in terms of the bond markets and the stock market as well. But I think it's really been the Chinese news, the GDP number this week, earlier in the week being 5.3% for the first quarter. The fact that their purchasing managers' indices are going positive again and showing expansion for now, and I'm not saying we're out of the woods yet with China, but I think this comes together with the idea that copper and wheat tend to trade fairly closely together, and with that hard red wheat leading, we do have a base now built that hopefully by the end of this month we can get some higher price levels in place to get some new crop hedging done in corn and beans and maybe even wheat as well.
Let's look at the Bloomberg Commodity Index. You and I look at this pretty regularly, and we watch this short covering type of rally of the wheat trade. Anything new stand out to you in terms of the Bloomberg Index?
Yeah, I think the big thing that we've seen now since we tested the major support line for a third month in a row a week or so ago, we are now making new monthly highs, and we've been able to take out, as of Wednesday, take out the March highs in terms of this commodity index, this grain commodity index, and we are now up against resistance. And if you blend together this chart with the hard red wheat chart in 2009, I really want to illustrate and hammer in the point that you need firing on all cylinders at this point. If we're going to break above this major trend line of resistance, we need the outside markets on our side. We need the dollar especially. I went back in the Commodity Research Bureau, the CRB annual books that I have about 20 of for the last 20 or so years, and it showed very clearly in the 2009 highlights that part of the reason why the wheat market was able to recover in the hard red wheat was a tighter supply, but it was also the fact that the U.S. dollar made a high in the month of April or early May and really went down from that period all the way into the end of 2009. And that was because the dollar had been bought as a safe haven against the financial crisis, and the market kind of signaled the all clear on that. And so this is, I think, another common theme with 2009 that we're dealing with right now. We're trying to signal the all clear when it comes to China. That should mean the dollar takes a break, and it should mean the Chinese currency, the Brazilian currency, the Japanese yen, they all firm up here as we get into the later part of spring.
Another chart you have with us here today. This one looks fairly interesting. The FAO food versus the U.S. dollar. And you got an interesting kind of convergence point, it looks like, highlighted on this chart. So what do you see it here, Mike?
Yeah, this is one of those charts that, you know, really tells you a lot when you look at it. And this goes all the way back to 1993, 1994. That you see these two lines, the FAO food price index versus the spot dollar, and you see how opposite they move. When you're making a major high in the purple, which is the dollar, you're typically make major lows in the food price index. And when you and I talk, I oftentimes will say the dollar going up is deflationary, the dollar going down is inflationary. And this is why I say that, is when you see the dollar go higher, and you see that major low in the food price index in 2000 and 2002, that was our peak deflation time period. And so you contrast that with 2008 before the financial crisis, and we were running very hot in the food price index. The dollar was on major lows, very inflationary. Then that financial crisis hit. And what I've highlighted in the green rectangle is that break in the dollar in 2009 around April, May. And that gave us a base to build upon in that FAO food price index. This goes to my special report that I've been working on. I got part one out last weekend to clients and subscribers, Jesse, but part two is going to deal specifically with food and with the dollar. And this is a key chart. This is kind of a look into the analysis of that special part two edition. And if we're going to build upon the food prices and see food go up like the gold has gone up, we really do almost have to have the dollar breaking lower at this stage. And finally, on this chart, what I'll show you is look at where the dollar was at the end of 2009, at the end of that rectangle, versus where it is right now. We're trading 105.80, 106. Back during that time, we were trading 75, 76 on the dollar. We got a long way to go in terms of moving down in the dollar to ignite that demand story all over again. So this chart really does kind of speak to me and suggest to me that yes, we have inflation. Yes, we need some premium in the commodities, in the food commodities too, but we are a long distance away from having an inflationary demand-led market right now in the grain complex. I think that's really important if this rally can continue to hold itself together the next week to 2 weeks.
Well, and just to kind of summarize the wheat trade here a little bit, Mike, the weather concerns in the U.S., in Europe, it really feels like all of that together is the main catalyst here. And I haven't seen much else in terms of, you know, supportive news. Maybe I've missed it, but it just feels like this is all weather driven right now.
I really think it is too. And I think it goes back to Russia, and it goes back to their supplies of exportable wheat at low, low prices. That time period looks like it's finally over with. And in part, that's due to the weather. I mean, the drought that the Black Sea region is seeing in parts of Ukraine and in parts of Western Russia is pretty severe right now. And then you contrast that with the Urals in Eastern Russia, Kazakhstan. They just lowered their wheat crop because of the historic flooding that's going on in the eastern part of Russia and the Urals regions. And then you have the Chinese situation where you've got 50-year flooding going on in Guangdong province, which is deep south in China. Not big wheat country, but it's pretty sizable rice country, Jesse. So that's another feature to this market, another leg to the stool. And I think it's important, especially to keep all this in mind, along with South America, along with the corn market, because of this HPAI. We've got this black swan coming out again on Wednesday, unfortunately, and it's something we're probably going to have to contend with. It's probably going to test our nerves when it comes to this rally that we're in right now.
All right. Once again, that is the voice of Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics, our guest analyst here today on Market Talk. We're going to continue our conversation. We are going to dive into those cattle markets and some of the news cycle concerns with HPAI. All that more coming up after this here on Market Talk.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
We are joined today by Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics here on Market Talk. And Mike, as you mentioned this there, the HPAI news, I want to get to that in a second. I do want to ask in terms of the corn and soybean markets, though, to kind of wrap the grains here a little bit. I'll pull up a world corn prices chart on the video feed for us. Corn beans a little more muted on Wednesday. I've heard some chatter that maybe there's some increase in farmer selling that's capping some of this rally in quarter beans compared to wheat. Talk about that and maybe what you're seeing in terms of world corn prices right now, Mike.
You know, some of the basis levels, especially at the river and corn, have been coming down with this futures rally. I think that's natural. I think also what I've been hearing in Illinois and Indiana and Ohio, Jesse, is almost the exact opposite, that those guys in a lot of areas north of I-74, north of I-70, that maybe the top thirds of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, they're really not getting much done between the cold, wet weather. And so this got me to continue to keep looking at what's going on in South America. You and I have been talking about Argentina. We've been talking about Brazil and if it's really got problems, and we should start to see it in the pork prices in the export market. I looked at this chart yesterday. It had not moved much. When I looked at it today before today's show, I was really happy to see the Brazil line, the Brazil corn, which is in purple. That's your purple line. And your French corn price, which is in blue, those two are running neck and neck with one another. And we're actually seeing the Argentine corn price go up as well now. And that's your green line. It's really nice to see three of the four of your major competitors really start to go higher than you. We're now at a point where the in the corn futures in Paris, in the MATIF price, we're over $1.30 over in EU versus CME corn prices. And you can see this chart shows that we've gone essentially from $200 a ton up to almost $220 between both Brazil and French cash corn. And we've also seen the $190 level to $200 level when it comes to the Argentine corn price. And note the Ukrainian price at the bottom in orange. It too is now hitting levels in brand new 2024 highs at this point, or getting right up against those late 2023 highs. This is a really solid piece of the puzzle when it comes to the corn, and I think it being able to be supportive of the wheat rally. So the key now, and this is what I've been talking to clients about all week, the key now is to get May corn, which is getting ready to go in delivery, to get it above 448, 449, because 448 was your March high, 448 and three quarters was your February high. Let's go above 450 on a closing basis, and all of a sudden we're talking about new three-month highs in the corn market. And I think that could uncover some additional strength, maybe 20, maybe 30 cents. And it goes back to what's happening in both the Ukraine, French wheat, French corn, and also Brazilian corn.
Let's talk livestock. Let's talk cattle specifically here, Mike. And it seems like that news cycle, you alluded to this earlier, kind of coming back around and haunting this cattle market again. At midweek, we got the reports of fragments of the bird flu found in milk samples, FDA reaffirming that pasteurized milk safe to drink, but still it's in the news cycle. Then USDA on Wednesday, they came out with federal orders, mandatory testing for interstate movement of dairy cattle, and mandatory reporting. So some of these news headlines, it appears, having an impact in this cattle market again. Futures down on Wednesday. Your thoughts on all of this activity here midweek?
I think for the listener and the viewer, the key with this market was to get it out of the news as far as this type of feature in the news headlines, because the funds play off of this and the consumers play off of this. And I was very happy to call a low in the cattle market, in the feeder cattle especially, after the cattle on feed report and the subsequent strength that we saw after that, led by the feeders, as long as we didn't have HPAI come back in the news. Well, this morning when I woke up, I saw that Good Morning America actually talked about milk samples having HPAI. And the headline from the Washington Post that I think really needs to make us stand up and take notice of this issue and not try and sweep it under the carpet and say, this is, you know, really just about bad media attention. It could be about that, but the Washington Post reported that it was in milk that was in grocery stores. When I see stuff like that as a livestock meat analyst, you do not want to see anything close to that. And in that same article, there was a public health official that said the fact that it got to this point means it's worse than we thought it would be in the dairy cattle. That was this morning at about 7 o'clock, Jesse. And then we got the USDA coming out with this mandatory reporting on going across state lines of dairy herds. That suggests that that public health official was right. This is a bigger problem than APHIS and USDA wanted to acknowledge 2 or 3 or 4 weeks ago. Maybe any of us wanted to acknowledge because we didn't want to blow it out of proportion, but it's a real deal now. So we really got to stay on top of it. And what that means to me is last Friday should have been a low in this market. I don't want to take out last Friday's lows in feeders especially, or fats, but especially feeders, because they've been the leader to the upside.
Let's look at a couple charts, monthly feeder chart as well, just to kind of maybe echo along with some of your points there. What do you see it on this monthly chart after Wednesday?
Yeah, the big thing here is if you take a step back and you don't care about what the news says, this chart still looks like a double top. You've got one high made back in late 2023, and then you came up with another major high right after we crossed into 2024. This market was, I think, on track to try and take out that double top and go ahead and extend the gains, because the cash market, let's face it, has been running 260, 265, in some cases as high as 280 for the feeder weight steers that we've been seeing sold. So it would not be hard for us to take out that 257, 258 old high from last September just because of what the cash market's been doing. Now, unfortunately, I'm going to have to go back analytically and say we're still stuck in a double top until we take out some of these major highs. And, you know, those major highs being this current monthly high of around 250. That's where we really got to start, is get those April feeders going off the board. This week, May takes over as lead month. Starting Monday, we need May feeders back above 250 on a closing basis. Then we can start talking about going up another leg again. The downside, though, is potentially what we really have to watch now more. And we did see in today's price action, the June fat cattle had a report day low of 174.58. We took that out with 174.22, something like that. We did take out the report day low on Wednesday in the June fat cattle. The report day low for the feeder, May feeders, was 241.13. And so that's the number we don't want to take out, because then that opens us up to going into the monthly lows at this stage.
Feeder fat spread as well. I'll pull this chart up here real quick just to kind of wrap our cattle discussion for you to expand a little bit more. Talk about what you're seeing here between the spreads right now.
It had a nice correction in the feeders against the fats. That's cyclically what's happening about every year, going back 7-8 years, is we tend to put lows in the feeders against the fats, lead month basis in the first quarter, second quarter. Doesn't happen every year, but it's something to really look at. I want these feeders to start going up against the fat cattle again on a cycle basis. You notice in 2014, going back to the very beginning of that chart, we were able to get north of $80 premiums in lead month feeders against lead month fats. That's the type of price action we want to get back to in terms of breaking through $65, $70 and going back to highs like we saw back in 2014. But if the feeders can't do it, then it gets me very, very nervous that the fat cattle market is going to get weaker, not stronger. And I'm going to have to go back to what we talked about 2 weeks ago, and that is getting floors underneath me if we can't get out of this mess that we just started to get ourselves into on Wednesday.
Well, I know hogs, too, were down on Wednesday, the dairy market in the red, too. So I think overall this protein sector, this livestock trade, just got to watch the news cycle, unfortunately, and be smart here in this window. Right, Mike?
Yeah, and the funds had covered a lot of their short positions, and so they could get short again. I'm not trying to promote that. I want the prices to go higher, but I also want to be realistic about what has happened in the past in a fund versus fundamental type market environment. And if we start seeing cancellations of beef export, U.S. beef exports by certain countries, that really makes me nervous, because then the consumer domestically is going to have to eat more beef because we can't get it out the door. So stock market, dollar, all these things still important, but unfortunately HPAI is back on our plate as far as a news headline item to have to discuss.
And that is a rumor that is out there that I'm working on maybe following, getting some confirmation on. I've even reached out to USDA for their thoughts on some of that potential as well. So we'll see where this news cycle goes. Mike, great stuff as always. And I know you mentioned you're working on special reports and more. Folks can find you very easily online and connect with you, can't they?
Yeah, globalcomresearch.com and globalcom with two M's, research.com. And if you have any questions as a cattleman, just fill out the trial newsletter or trial subscription piece on the website and just post a comment, a question in the comment section.
Globalcom with two M's, research.com. Mike Zuzolo, Global Commodity Analytics. Thank you, sir. Appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Jesse. Take care.
Once again, Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics. Find him online very easily. GlobalCom with two M's, research.com. Some of the closes real quick from Wednesday's session. May corn down 5 1/4, 437 and 3/4. December corn down 2, 472 and 3/4. Soybeans, May down 1 1/2, 1166. November beans, 0.5 higher, 1174 1/2. May bean meal up 80 cents a ton, 346. May bean oil down 65 points, 44.60. May Chicago wheat 9 1/2 higher, 594 1/2. July up 10 1/4 at 613. May Kansas City wheat up 15 1/2, 624 1/4. July up 15 3/4 at 630. Minneapolis spring wheat, May up 12 1/2, 679. July spring wheat up 13 1/4, 685 1/2. Live cattle April 125 lower, 182.10. June down 190, 175.25. Feeders April 65 lower, 243.10. May down 195, 244.10. May hogs down 122, 97.35. June hogs 50 lower, 107.45. We'll be back to wrap up Market Talk of the Way right after this.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Thanks for sticking with us here today. Appreciate Mike Zuzolo from Global Commodity Analytics for joining us today for market analysis. Let's take a look at some news headlines before we wrap up today's program. Well, Midwest Dairy represents 4,000 dairy farm families and works to build dairy demand, critical work that requires strong leadership. Corey Scott is the new CEO of Midwest Dairy, who began her duties in March.
The first few weeks have been an absolute whirlwind of meeting the staff, meeting all of our board. We just concluded our annual meeting last week, so I had the opportunity to meet all 120 corporate board members and division board members for Midwest Dairy and really be thrown in headfirst to what the organization values and some of our strategic focus for the year going forward.
Scott talks about how her previous experience prepared her for the job.
I have been in food and beverage and food and agriculture for just over 15 years. So I had the unique opportunity to start in agronomy by working for a local cooperative and driving a semi-truck, and then had the opportunity to move into Land O'Lakes, a cooperative based right here in Minnesota that supports just over 1,000 dairy producers. When I did transition into dairy, I spent quite a lot of time working on farm in risk management and on-farm consulting. So I led a team of on-farm consultants that focused on the business objectives of dairy farmers. I then had the opportunity to transition into more of a sustainability-focused role. And this role is a little bit unique and really has made up the last 3 years of my career. I really was working to be the bridge between farmers doing great things at the farm gate and the multinational companies and the consumers that care about those activities and the impact that they have on the environment.
And Scott talks about her top priorities as the new CEO.
First, in order to increase dairy consumption, we have to build trust in dairy. And so you're going to see Midwest Dairy do a lot of work in understanding what our consumer-based trust levels are. We already know that there's a huge opportunity in Gen Z to build more trust. So you're going to see us focus some efforts in building that trust before that Gen Z becomes the next spending power. There's also unique categories of thought leaders where we need to build more trust, and sustainability thought leaders is one of those. The second piece to building trust and increasing consumption is ensuring that we have the products that meet the interests and the goals of those consumers that we're trying to reach. You already heard me talk about Gen Z. What they're seeking in dairy products is very different than what my grandparents are seeking in dairy products.
She says Midwest Dairy will also focus on research and innovation in the dairy sector. Scott talks about her vision for the future of Midwest Dairy.
When I'm speaking with farmers, one of the things that I want to emphasize is the power that their voice has. So when I think about the future of Midwest Dairy and the farmers that are in it, I want our farmers to know that they have incredible power by sharing their stories. When we go speak with consumers in our population centers, many, many of these individuals have never seen a cow, much less touched them or had the opportunity to even speak with a farmer. In the day and time that we exist in today, have a unique opportunity to engage on a different level, and that's through digital media.
Want to learn more about Corey Scott and other Midwest Dairy leaders and see the Dairy Checkoff at work? You can visit MidwestDairy.com. Again, that's MidwestDairy.com. The Association of Equipment Manufacturers will host the Modern Ag on the Mall event next month in Washington, D.C. As the Farm Bill remains front and center for U.S. agriculture, AEM is showcasing the latest farm equipment for the public and policymakers. Kurt Blades, AEM Senior Vice President of Agriculture, says it's a great way to tell the story of modern agriculture.
For the second time in the last 3 years, we're pleased to be hosting a celebration of modern agriculture on the National Mall. This really provides an opportunity for those of us in the ag industry to tell the story to lawmakers and policymakers and the general public about what is happening in modern agriculture and the difference that it's making in producing food and fiber and fuel for a growing world.
A celebration of modern ag on the National Mall takes place the week of May 6th. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, it's open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day. Blades says there are multiple target audiences for the event.
Our first audience is an audience of about 50 to 200 people. And those are those folks that are really involved with writing public policies that are really impacting agriculture. The secondary audience is also very exciting, and that's the general public. That might be hill staffers or just general public that are walking through the mall. So we love to be able to tell those stories. Tractors and combines and pieces of equipment are pretty good eye candy and a pretty good way to lure people in to tell that story. Story to an audience that is less and less informed than they have been in the past.
Ann Blades explains what folks will see when they are on the National Mall.
Well, first of all, the National Mall is a very big place. So if you've been there, you know we're talking football fields in length. And so we've got 25 different companies and 30 different associations representing various aspects of agriculture. And we'll have everything from sprayers and combines to small tractors to robotic milking to irrigation, all of the things that you see on a modern farm today. And the really interesting place of the backdrop of the nation's capital and Washington Monument.
Blade says now is the perfect time to highlight U.S. agriculture on the National Mall as the industry seeks a new farm bill.
The timing of this year's celebration of modern ag on the National Mall couldn't be better, as we are still without the passage of a new farm bill. There are two critical pieces of legislation that AEM is a big supporter of in the new farm bill, and that's the Precision Ag Loan Act and the Precise Act. Both of those bipartisan bills provide incentives for farmers to invest in precision agriculture. So we look forward to telling those stories to the influential audience of Washington, D.C. We like to be in that environment at a very important time while those debates are happening in the halls of the Capitol.
And you can learn more information about that upcoming Ag on the Mall event. Just go to AEM.org for more. Again, that is AEM.org for more information. Again, the Modern Ag on the Mall event is going to be held on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. the week of May 6th, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. It'll be open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day. Really a great event that the Association of Equipment Manufacturers is able to bring to Washington, D.C. With that, we're out of time here on this episode of Market Talk. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to talk with Brian Doherty, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing. We'll also be joined by a new voice on the show, Craig Turner with StoneX is going to join us. Both those guys will have market analysis for us coming up tomorrow on Market Talk. We're out of time. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day.